Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Sterling, the guy that was on yesterday, John, he says that Bitcoin can't ever be what Visa is, that it can never scale to that size due to technical factors of the ever-growing size of the blockchain itself, the network's size or the bandwidth that you would need to handle transactions like that. Because the idea behind Bitcoin is it's decentralized, meaning that anybody can run, in theory, one of these nodes, the thousands of nodes on the network. So how do you address that particular objection? Because obviously, when we started doing this, we thought this was going to be able to compete with Visa. Do you think it ever can? He says it can't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Bitcoin can and will compete with Visa. It just depends on how we go about actually scaling it into the future. And we have to remember that Satoshi Nakamoto, the original creator, the enigmatic creator of Bitcoin.
The anonymous.
Yeah, the anonymous enigmatic creator of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. His plan, or her, or group, or whoever it is, was to do massive on-chain scaling for Bitcoin, and for Bitcoin to get as big as it needed to be, for everybody to use it, for it to be a peer-to-peer anonymous cash system. And originally there were block limitations, there were cap limits on the blockchain for Bitcoin, but those were put there to be expanded. The reason they were there to begin with is because if you have too large block sizes, then people can more easily spam the blockchain.
The reason that you can buy $20 worth of Bitcoin, or you can buy $10 worth of Bitcoin, or you can buy $10 million worth of Bitcoin is because they have these, these 10 millionth units called Satoshis. One would presume that the creator of Bitcoin intended for transactions to potentially be quite small because he created units that are currently worth, I think, a 40th of a cent, right? So this way you could, the great vision I had for Bitcoin was, in social media, great comments. Sometimes there's something I can't just like a comment on Facebook. I can't just heart it on Twitter. I'd like to be able to, throw a dime at the person so that, they actually feel something. It becomes some real payoff. And then if 100 people threw a dime at somebody, then that comment would be of value. It would be something that people would be more likely to see. I wanted these micropayments on the internet. And my micropayments are gone.
Right.
They're
he
destroyed.
Was say, he said yesterday, we've got PayPal. We've got Visa. If you needed to buy a pack of gum or a soda, just use that. I like what Roger Ver has said, who's one of the founders over there at Bitcoin.com, is that, why would anybody want to store their value in something that's useless otherwise? I mean, Bitcoin used to be useful as a store of value and as a currency because you could spend it on anything. In Keene, New Hampshire, where we're from, if you want to buy barbecue, pizza, you can get a massage, you can go to the auto repair shop. We've got real-life businesses that are accepting Bitcoin, but it's getting hard for me as an evangelist, as the person who's going and talking to these business owners, it's getting difficult for me to pitch Bitcoin simply because I know that the average person is not going to be excited about walking into Corner News, the little newsstand in Keene, picking a soda off of the rack and then taking it up to the cash register where they're then told, that's going to be $2 instead of $1 because it's a $1 soda, but you got to spend a dollar on a transaction fee in order to send the Bitcoin.
That's just not viable. I'm already offended paying a full dollar for a soda. You're going to ask me for two?
Yeah.
That's four times what I want to pay.
Just because Bitcoin has the first mover advantage does not mean it's guaranteed to win, because what we're involved
sure.
with right now...
We're not driving Model Ts.
Absolutely. Well, and we're in an environment now where we have truly competing currencies in an open market, and that hasn't existed in this form, to this extent in the past, just because everybody and anybody can build without asking permission. They can build these blockchains, create cryptocurrencies, and move into the future. Like, for instance, if Bitcoin doesn't solve its problems, there's currencies like Nexus that are coming into the mix that actually are going to solve a myriad of problems or are slated to solve a myriad of problems. This includes creating 3D blockchains, defeating possible problems with quantum computing and how quantum computing might be able to break elliptical curve cryptography. But And if Bitcoin doesn't scale, if people don't work together, then it's just not going to win. And that's the exact reason why we've had user-activated hard forks and Bitcoin Cash came into existence, was because of this exact problem. That's why I have a lot of faith in Bitcoin Cash to grow. And a lot of people are like, oh, Bitcoin Cash is just Bitcoin Crash. It just crashes all the time. It's not going to be a great currency. Here's the
I've never heard that one.
Yeah. But here's one of the things that about
Probably
Bitcoin.
Probably because I don't spend enough time on Twitter. Sorry,
right.
Go ahead.
No, it's all right. Here, one of the things about Bitcoin Cash is, of course, it's going to start off kind of slow, but I still think its current market
Bitcoin. Bitcoin.com, does it take an official position on the upcoming SegWit 2X fork, this big contentious potential split of Bitcoin that may be coming up here in about 2 weeks?
So, yeah, sort of our position is originally that was going to be an acceptable compromise, and we'd signed off, and the compromise was going to be fine. But now, and this is more my personal opinion, and I think we'll find agreement largely at Bitcoin.com with this position. We already have Bitcoin Cash. Bitcoin Cash solved the problem immediately. We have massive...
Solved the scaling problem.
That's right, 8 megabytes. And so it's doing what we need to do. So that's sort of what we're looking at as an acceptable measure, using Bitcoin Cash. So SegWit 2X is kind of, well, now we can just use that those funds from when it forks off just to buy more Bitcoin Cash.
If we end up seeing a 50-50 split, or close to it, you're going to see the difficulty of Bitcoin, for those that don't know, the mining difficulty gets more, you know, increases over time. And so if all of a sudden there's half as many people mining Bitcoin or the new SegWit 2X version of Bitcoin, doesn't that mean that it's going to be the blocks are going to come slower on both sides in that case, which could make both of those Bitcoins worth less? And maybe that could help Bitcoin Cash? Could Bitcoin Cash come to the rescue in a situation where you're seeing a contentious fork and ongoing fighting between the miners?
Yeah, that's true. If we already have Bitcoin Cash in existence and all this contention is causing slower activity and slower market adoption to the new fork and people don't want to get involved in it, yeah, that could definitely bolster Bitcoin Cash, because it's already in existence and the developers, people in the community and the ecosystem already have a knowledge of what it is and what it's there for. And it's so far, and I heard that it does look like Bitcoin Cash is going to fork. I don't know if that fork already happened or not, but it was definitely non-contentious.
Right, and that was a hard fork for that everybody was on board with,
right,
to upgrade the protocol.
That's right. So it looks like to me that's something that, as far as what Ian's saying, that's something that's definitely acceptable, and I think that people will jump on to Bitcoin Cash and really bolster its price and stuff. If there's this fear-mongering and the infighting and the backbiting and the nastiness involved.
It's nasty. Dmitry Rasa is with us now. Longtime listeners may remember him as one of the programmers behind the longtime Mycelium wallet, one of the more popular and longest-running Bitcoin wallets out there. So welcome back to Free Talk Live, Dmitry.
Thanks. Minor correction, I wasn't actually a programmer. I was lead product manager, so I manage the programmers. I have some programmer
but
background.
You know how to program.
I know how to program.
Yeah, you
but
gotta know how to program.
I manage the business side of it, how to get things done.
If you're going to be overseeing programmers, you probably should know how to program yourself.
Yeah. Right.
So great wallet. I used it for a long time, and it's still out there, still going strong. But that's not what you're doing these days.
No, I stepped away from Mycelium in May, kind of pursuing my own thing. In Bitcoin, in this whole field, you have to have 100% trust in everything you do. As soon as your reputation takes a chink or whatever, you're basically dead. Mm. I think Mycelium is still tracking, doing what they need to do, but unfortunately, they weren't as transparent as I was hoped they would
really
be. So that's why I decided to step away in case anything happens later on.
I stopped using their wallet when the fees started going up, and they didn't handle their fees in the same way that the blockchain wallet or the Airbits wallet did. I found that they were offering
Airbits
lower fees.
Did much better. Unfortunately, we actually used the Mycelium backend was a Core client, and Mycelium used Core's built-in fee prediction, which was way too high at the time. Regardless of what governments who try to ban it or control it are going to do, the fact is there's a lot more people who will have a much higher incentive to get comforts from Bitcoin than there are people who want to control their positions of being able to print money and push people around. The more kind of a step up from this whole incentive structure is, how do we actually create these specific incentives to kind of lead us where we want to lead, not follow what the comforts are, but great incentives. And this
to
is
create incentives for people to get into Bitcoin or cryptocurrency?
How do we change the world using incentives? This is where the next portion of my speech would go into is Bitcoin, proof of work. What is actually being proven in proof of work?
That you were crunching numbers.
You got big money to buy ASICs.
The whole proof of work is not the hash. It's you are proving that you have the fastest hardware and the cheapest electricity. That's all. At the core, that's proof of work, what it is. The biggest complaint I've heard about Bitcoin, one of a long time ago, is that Bitcoin wastes a lot of energy and it's just it's a big waste. But and a lot of people who look at Bitcoin for what it does do seem to miss a lot of the really important stuff, which is what I was just talking about. People see Bitcoin as it's just money. It gives us freedom to transact, and it gives us freedom to store and like have our own sovereign offshore banks in our pockets, so to speak. They're missing the incentive portion, where we now have an over $100 billion system that is specifically designed to incentivize people to look for faster processors and cheaper, more efficient sources of energy. And now that we understand this about Bitcoin, we can look at other projects and kind of understand it better, too. Like, for example, MateSave and Storage. What is their proof of work? Cheapest, most efficient method of storing data and fastest way to transmit the data over internet blocks.
Storage and MadeSafe are decentralized storage and service, cloud storage, of serving websites or whatever, that kind of thing.
Other services like Factum might be an incentive to secure data, registry of ownership more securely, and being able to possibly sort and search that data structure in a faster way so you can find out who owns what.
What can people do to make Bitcoin more ubiquitous, make it the currency of the future? What can an individual do?
Find ways to remove discomforts and improve comforts. Mostly in Bitcoin, there's still a lot of discomforts.
The fees,
the time.
Is Bitcoin going to stay on top for much longer, do you think?
I think so. I think at this point, Bitcoin still has enough of a first mover and network effect to survive.
Survive is one thing, but stay on top is another thing, right?
Stay on top, I mean.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of places you can actually spend most other currencies. Most other
currencies
you still have to convert back to Bitcoin.
We're working to change that in New Hampshire. We've got Derek J. Freeman and Steven Zeiler out on the seacoast who've come up with AnyPay, which is a merchant app to allow people to accept Dash and Bitcoin. And so they're just rolling that out now, and we're working on getting it into some of the merchants, the real brick-and-mortar stores. Where now, of course, if you want to get out of Dash, then you still usually have to convert that to Bitcoin. What is a Bitcoin day trader? What does that mean?
Sure. So a Bitcoin day trader, more specifically the website that I run, BitcoinDayTrader.com, is an open-source community of cryptocurrency traders. And so we work all of the cryptocurrency markets. There's over 1,200 cryptocurrencies to choose from, and we look to buy low and sell high over and over again.
And, I mean, does it work out? I mean, how do you do it manually? Is there a robot that
you
use?
Absolutely. There's all sorts of interesting ways to trade. There's algorithmic ways, programmatic and manual trades. And there's probably several thousand full-time professional cryptocurrency traders around the world.
Yeah, I've met a few people who do it, and I've got to say from my experience, personally trying this, all I was ever able to do was buy high and sell low.
Yeah, and that you can make money doing that with margin short trading if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, but I wasn't trying to do that.
Yeah, now with markets and trading, there's a lot of education that needs to be done out there. There's a lot of new cryptocurrency traders, people interested in all the major assets, and that's part of what my community is designed to address some of those issues, answering those questions, making sure that people are trading safely, that they're considering their risk management, their money management, all those things. We have a chat group where people discuss these issues 24/7.
At the last Texas Bitcoin conference, it was an AI on the blockchain application thing that won funding for the Shark Tank thing that they did. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I mean, there's histories behind what you have just said.
So what's going to happen to the Bitcoin price? Mark said that you have some predictions you wanted to share.
Yeah, so there's some really interesting technical analysis on Bitcoin right now. And as you know, we've recently reached a new all-time high, $6,200.
Yep.
And it's been hovering around in that range for a while with a slight correction in the last week or so.
Yeah, it was around 5,700 or so earlier this weekend.
When you zoom out on the charts and you look at Bitcoin price from, say, 2014 to 2015, you can actually draw lines that channel a parabolic arc upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of like in this very early ascent of the Bitcoin parabolic price movement, which could at some point and over many years hit $100,000 of Bitcoin.
So you're saying that if I want to stick with my buying low, selling high thing, it's time for me to liquidate all the Bitcoin I have. If I want to lose money, liquidate Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, I can't make any suggestions on what to do with your buy or sell, but with every time you have an all-time high with a currency, you should expect there to be a pullback and a retest of the support levels of that asset.
For those who are missing the Texas Bitcoin Conference, you can't get here. It's sold out. You're going to be throwing what you're calling the Free State Blockchain Digital Assets Conference. We're going to get into that. But first, you spoke this morning. I think you were the opening speaker today?
Yes.
You wanted to talk about what with the audience? Because we were sitting out here the whole time, so we didn't get a chance to go and see it. So what did we miss?
The official topic was going to be something about mistakes you can avoid in crypto, but that was set a long time ago. So what I was planning on talking about was Spacesuit X, this open source project that I helped design, which basically makes it easier for you to analyze digital assets. So I talked a little bit about that, but mainly I just kind of talked from the heart and talked a little bit about how things have changed over these last 4 years or so in this space and what it means to me, which I think is really a big deal that we're in the middle of something cool right now.
No, you just moved to New Hampshire, right? Pretty recently?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a place up there not long ago, and I moved the company to Portsmouth.
What's the company? I thought you moved a couple companies or something like
that. Yeah, so there's Chainstone Labs is a startup that I started about 2 years ago, and it bought my company that I've had for 20 years called Atlantic Financial, which is an investment firm. So the whole company overall is focused on investment management, tokenization, and securitization of or tokenization of securities. So sort of building the decentralized investment management firm of the future. I think what's really exciting is that it looks like this thing may work.
It's beginning to look that way.
Bitcoin fracturing?
It looks like it might actually be real.
Even with Bitcoin potentially fracturing again in 2 weeks?
Honey Badger don't care. I mean, we've had a very good track record of making it through these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it now looks like we just might have this be real.
Honey Badger doesn't care, but who's the Honey Badger at this point? I'm having a difficult time discerning that. There's a bunch of coins running around with Honey Badger furs on.
That's a good point. I say the Honey Badger is in the eye of the beholder. It's whatever code you like. If you like code with 21 million coins or 27 million coins, or you like 10-minute block time or whatever your thing is that you've signed up for, and maybe part of that is not just the code, maybe it's how much of a community, or maybe I trust a certain party. On Twitter I said, if you've been burned on Bitcoin, it's probably because you've been burned in crypto, it's probably because you trusted people. Learn from that and don't trust people. And Ari Paul had a really good point. He says, well, you're already trusting people all the time. You can't verify every line of every code. So really, in this sort of trustless society, I guess the difference is that it's not that we don't trust people, it's that we have the choice of who to trust now, rather than some bureaucrat saying, you have to trust me.
I just handed you our quick and dirty flyer that me and Derek J. Freeman, who lives out in the Portsmouth area, runs the Free State Bitcoin Shop. Have you been to the Free State Bitcoin Shop yet?
No, but I'm going to be a real regular. We're going to start, we're going to have our a meetup that we're going to start, and I'm going to be planning on going myself regularly.
Awesome.
Because I'm going to live right near there. So.
Yeah, they are doing some cool work out there at the the Bitcoin Shop. They are only accepting cryptocurrency, so people walk in off the street. It's basically a big outreach project.
Nice.
Just, you know, strangers walking in off the street, they see things they want to buy, and they come in and they try to buy them. They're told, sorry, we don't take cash. you have to use cryptocurrency if you want to buy anything in the store. So we hammered out a quick quickie flyer here that I just had delivered, so I'm hoping to hand it out at the conference here, letting people know New Hampshire is the destination for people that really want freedom and cryptocurrency together, because that's what we have, and there's it's really the community there is unmatched. And I think some of that's going to be on display coming up here this December with the very first ever Bitcoin conference based in New Hampshire. You're putting this thing together, Bruce. It is called the Free State Blockchain Digital Assets Conference. The website, blockchainnh.com. What inspired you to put it? First of all, you've probably never thrown a conference before, or have you?
Yeah, I've done a few of them.
You have? Okay.
I've done the Dubai Bitcoin Conference.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Then we do the Satoshi Roundtable, which is like a private industry event.
In the crypto universe, a lot of times people focus a little too much on just the coding and things, and to a certain extent, sometimes media people are viewed in a lesser sort of lens as sort of like a hanger-on. But really, for the amount of media attention, for how loud we've been screaming this to as many people as we could get it, there's so many people who don't know.
Yep.
And that's the thing about a freedom movement or a distributed network that is a cryptocurrency, is it revolves on people connecting to each other and using it. And people won't do that if they don't know.
Absolutely. And so that's one of the things we're doing here, is we're raising awareness. Once they hear about it, they're absolutely interested. Who wouldn't want to go to a place? You live on the seacoast.
Yes.
Who wouldn't want to go to a place? Who is a cryptocurrency fan or Bitcoin fan wouldn't want to live in a place where you can go and have breakfast at a restaurant, lunch and dinner with cryptocurrency, a place where you can go and get a massage, a place where you can go.
Yoga?
Yep, they do yoga out there. There's a sunglasses store, vintage clothing, and they just, I believe, added another restaurant within the last week. Who wouldn't want to live in a place where you can actually spend cryptocurrency, and you can spend Dash at almost all of these places?
Yes.
Out on the seacoast.
That's the big deal, the big game changer for me, is because I live entirely off of Dash. I used to live entirely off of Bitcoin, and then there was too many problems with network congestion that made my life a personal hardship, so I switched to Dash.
Dash has been so great in New Hampshire, because right now if you do a Bitcoin transaction, it's going to cost you $1, $2, $3.
$3.50 today. I was looking at buying a hardware wallet.
The averaged out is close to $4 today.
That's the $3.50 is the highest I've seen it for just a typical transaction at any random time. It's been as low within the last few weeks. A Bitcoin transaction I've seen as low as 6 cents, but it's less often that low. It's more often 75 cents, $1, $1.50. But yesterday it was like $2.50, and today it's $3.50. It's gone insane. I actually said no, I'm not going to buy this with Bitcoin, and I pulled cash out of my wallet because I didn't have enough Dash on hand to be able to make that purchase with Dash. And again, some of the Dash is still relatively new compared to Bitcoin, and they're still developing features for it. So I have a feature called the Reload, which allows you to monitor a Dash wallet, and then if Dash leaves that wallet, it places an order on an exchange to repurchase that same amount of Dash. But I haven't figured out how to get it to work with Bitcoin. I can do an old style wallet where it's just one address and there's no change addresses to change up. But I haven't figured out how to make that work with a regular Dash. I don't think I can do it with mobile
maybe
Dash.
Maybe not.
Wallet. I don't expect SegWit 2X, the big fork that's coming up in the next couple of weeks, I don't expect it to fix it. I really don't. I expect it to throw even more confusion into the marketplace, because now you're going to have companies that are arguing about whether or not their Bitcoin, the 2X version or the 1X version, should be called Bitcoin. And some companies are going to call it one thing. Other companies are going to call it another thing. I mean, it's so hard not to succumb to the fear, uncertainty, and doubt around what might happen with Bitcoin, while all along Dash is just moving ahead with their plans.
Yes, of course. There is something to be said for that sort of stability. And the thing that is undeniable that Bitcoin's always had has been that network effect advantage, integrations, large businesses, lots of users. And one thing I saw on the Bitcoin subreddit, when you said a lot of these large companies signed the 2X agreement, and then you had people taking pictures of cutting up their BitPay card, they're done with BitPay, which, for one thing, how are you going to accept Bitcoin for your business if you don't have BitPay?
Well, pay soon,
Yeah, well, that's going to be, that's one big hurdle. And then people just swearing off Coinbase and just all these Shapeshift. People are saying, just how are you going to deal with that Shapeshift? I mean, the things that make Bitcoin as great as it is, they're just trying to get rid of that because of some political squabbles. I mean, let's be honest, that's what it is.
Yes,
and,
for sure.
I mean, in the meantime, you know, Dash is no walk in. I mean, there's plenty of disagreements behind the scenes and stuff, but there is something that's very different about Dash. Is first off, you get to decide. Consensus.
To make a proposal to the Dash Network, one needs to spend 5 Dash.
Yes.
This has been a point of contention because people are like, I want to make a proposal, but I want to spend, what is it,
$1,200,
you know, some $1,500, some large amount in order to make the proposal. It kind of keeps, it keeps a certain amount of people out, which may be good, may be bad. People have proposed lowering that amount. What's going on with that?
As far as I know, nothing has been decided on changing it.
Wouldn't someone have to propose a $1,500, a 5-dash proposal to lower the proposal amount?
I don't know.
not necessarily. In order to change that, the core team would have to implement a code change, and then that would have to be included. And so the 5-dash is to vote to decide what the community wants.
We've always had a lot of high positive energy at our conferences.
Yep.
But there's nothing like two all-time highs from the high 5,000s into the 6,000s 2 weeks before a conference to raise the energy.
It certainly has.
Yeah, so it's beautiful here, and the people are – it's a sellout. I mean, just in case it wasn't clear, you've basically oversold the event.
Yeah, a little bit, but not too much. We have fire codes and stuff that we have to attend to. But the when we sold out, it was traumatic to so many people.
Traumatic.
And we had to scramble to find people that weren't going to use their tickets, scramble to find workarounds.
Oh, so it was traumatic for the people who didn't get tickets
in time. Yes, they
didn't
get in.
They were bummed out.
There was so much energy trying to get into the conference this year.
Well, yeah, that is
you got to plan ahead.
It's a good problem to have. I mean, I can remember when this started. It was at a racetrack.
Yes.
The very first year, which was a huge venue.
Yes.
And it's so much more compact, and it's better. I think it's better now than it has. Not that it was bad
the first
couple times, but this is a good. I mean, it was a nice venue. I don't know if we're going to move to a different one next year, but because we did.
Well, we probably will.
Where does one go to learn more about Factum? Because it sounds like a really detailed discussion we probably shouldn't get into.
Well, but I would boil it down to how do I make the blockchain act like BitTorrent? See, BitTorrent. When you download a file, we obviously only download Linux distributions and things like that.
Of course, no one would ever use it for illegal purposes.
We never use it for any other purpose. But whatever content it is you're bringing down, you validate it in BitTorrent because the hash, you may not know this, but the hash of the file you downloaded matches what's in the torrent file.
That way you know that you're getting what you're supposed to be getting.
Right, but that's it.
Yeah.
When you download the Linux distribution, you don't need the distribution for any other application or any other movie or song or anything else that might. I'm not saying that BitTorrent's used to download movies or songs, but if
people still do that,
I don't think so.
Legal,
I think we're all
legal movies.
I think we're all all the open source movies.
Okay,
and so anyway, but the bottom line is, I don't need all that. I only need the data that I have. It's a common theme within libertarian thought. I don't actually think of myself as a libertarian. I think of myself more as a technologist, and underneath technologist, maybe a bit of an anarchist. But it is a common observation that government. You describe it as a service organization, but what service organization has such overwhelming force to require you to support its activities as well as take its services, whether you want them or not?
Right. It's the only true monopoly.
I don't consider service to be threatening me at any point.
It shouldn't be. Most people, when they hear service dog, they don't think attack dog.
Right.
But yet, that's what we have. We have these growling Dobermans that are our service dogs. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm being a little extremist, but
well, no, that's what we like here.
We're inculcated our whole lives to believe that we need this organization that claims a monopoly privilege on the use of violence in a given landmass, or it would be absolute chaos.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.